Welcome into a very special March Madness edition of Armchair Sports presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt. With me tonight, I have a very special co-host and co-anchor, Garrett Thornton. Garrett, how are you doing tonight?
Good, Casey. How are you doing?
Awesome. Thanks for joining us tonight. Garrett is actually a staff member of Oregon Sports News, so very much appreciate you joining us tonight and really hope we have a lot of fun. We got a lot to cover. March Madness kicked off today. We've got a lot going on with the Blazers. Can they make the playoffs? Will they make the playoffs? We also have some NFL free agency and draft news going on. A lot of teams losing and gaining players at a rapid pace. Hard to keep track of. We'll try to fill you in on all of that. So let's dive right into March Madness, Garrett. Were there any? Did you get to see any games today?
Yeah, I watched a little bit of each game, I think. Obviously can't just sit at my desk at work the whole day and watch it, or else I wouldn't want my boss to know that. But
yeah, no one can.
But no, I got to watch quite a bit. I mean, it was interesting to watch Gonzaga and Villanova both show some weaknesses in the first half of their games and then come out and blow up the 16 seeds. I thought that was pretty interesting. Florida looked better than I expected them to look today. But other than that, you got Middle Tennessee beating Minnesota, the upset that everyone kind of saw coming, but for some reason I didn't take Middle Tennessee on my bracket. So,
but I didn't either.
What did you think about the action today?
You know, it was a little disappointing for me. I went out on a big limb and got chopped down early. I picked Maryland to go to the Final Four, so I've already been axed the Final Four team. And, you know, I still like my other Final Four teams. I've got Kansas, North Carolina, and I'm blanking on the third one, but you know, I still like my bracket, but it's really tough to lose a Final Four team on the first day, especially when it was a chance in the first place. But you know, maybe I'm not an oracle here. You know, I enjoy watching sports, but I get just as much wrong as the other guy, so it's all right.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's why we fill out brackets. We fill them out just so we can get frustrated with them later.
Yeah.
Everyone knows they're not going to have a perfect bracket. We all just wait until that first game, and then we're disappointed the rest of the time. But no, what made you choose Maryland? Why did you think that they were going to make it to the Final Four?
Nothing special. Just looking at the bracket they were in, I felt like they could pull it off. And I always try to pull an underdog into the Elite Eight or Final Four, because I feel like somebody always goes. It's always, you know, Butler was a big deal when they first got to the final, because they had never, I don't think they'd ever been in the bracket before, and then all of a sudden here they are, the Cinderella story. So I always try to plan on something like that happening. It's hard to know who that's going to be. You know, it could be Rhode Island this year. I don't know what they're going to do, if they're going to be able to get past their first game, let alone playing Oregon, if Oregon get out of their first game. But
well, and then they got to play Louisville or Michigan, and yeah, they've got a tough road out of
right.
that bracket.
Well, and even then, I think they've got UCLA and Kentucky to deal with, so it's a big bracket.
Yeah, and I mean, when I look at this bracket, I'm with you. I like putting an underdog in the Final Four. I think that's why we watch these games. We're watching for these underdogs. We're watching
right.
for these stories that we talk about for years to come. But this year, I could not bring myself to picking anybody but the number one seeds. I have four number one seeds in my Final Four. I don't think I've ever done that on a bracket before, but that's where I'm at today. So I was a little nervous when Gonzaga was down early. I was a little nervous when Villanova was down early. But as I sit, those two are still alive. So
yep.
Not that I'm going out on a limb or anything, but all four number one seeds in the Final Four. I doubt that'll happen, but I thought that was a safe pick for the year.
It's happened, I think, a little more frequently than people like to remember, but, you know, that just might put you in a tough pinch where you might be rooting for an underdog and realize, oh, crap, they're beating my team that I need in the final.
Well, that's what I do every year. I root for the teams that I'm rooting for and have on my bracket, but by the second or third day, my bracket is so screwed that I'm just rooting for all underdogs. I'm just rooting for stories. I'm rooting for the RJ Hunter final shot kind of moments.
Yep.
And that's what I'm looking for in March Madness. We haven't necessarily had that. We had the earlier game, the Vanderbilt Northwestern game. That was a cool finish, but I'm still waiting.
Depending on
that
which side of it you were on, I guess.
Tournament.
That game was a really great finish, but I guess it depends on which side you were on. I mean, poor Vanderbilt. I mean,
yeah.
They're just a miscommunication in the closing seconds, and they probably win that game. It's really bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, I had Vanderbilt beat Northwestern just because I didn't necessarily trust Northwestern, but they're moving on, and now they get to face the big dog Gonzaga. We'll see how they handle that.
Yeah, and Gonzaga didn't look too sharp in the first half today. They cleaned it up in the second half and really put them away, but I'm curious how that game's going to go.
No, I think it's one to keep an eye on, but I also have watched enough Gonzaga basketball this year to know that after a game like this, they're probably going to come out with a little extra motivation, and they're going to put Northwestern away pretty quick.
That's what I'm hoping for, and, you know, they've got some trees in the middle, so it should be exciting. So do you have a favorite basketball team in college, and is that the same team that's your favorite to win it this year, or are those two different teams?
Two different. I'm an Oregon fan, just the home team. I've always rooted for Oregon, even when they were terrible. Do have to admit, I watch a heck of a lot more Oregon basketball now that they're actually good than
sure.
before.
Right.
But I just really like this team that they're putting on the court this year. There's leaders on the floor. It's not the one-and-done guys. There's guys that have been around that you've known their personality. They've got shot blockers. They've got shooters. They've got scorers. I just think it's an exciting team to watch. That Chris Boucher injury really hurts them.
Yep.
Before that, I would have probably put them into the Final Four just because they have so many ways to beat you, and they showed in so many games this year that they can battle back, that they can hang in tough games, and that they can win it late. But that bracket that they're in is brutal. I mean, Iona, I don't think that they'll have much problem with them tomorrow. But then Creighton has been a tough team in stretches. Then Michigan or Louisville. And it's a tough bracket. And then in the Elite Eight, they play Kansas. Like, that's a rough bracket. You've got to win three or four major games to get to the Final Four.
So where do you have them going in your bracket?
I have them losing to Kansas in the Elite Eight.
And that'd be a good game. I mean, either of those teams could win that game. I think the Chris Boucher injury definitely hurts, and I know that a lot of Oregon fans are crying foul at the number 3 seed when they were, you know, quote-unquote guaranteed a 2 seed, but I think that injury has to come into consideration.
I think so, too. And when we talk about the College Football Playoff Committee, we want them to take into account players that are injured or players that were injured for certain stretches of the year. And we talk about that a lot around the College Football Playoff, but that's not talked about as much with this committee, who's been doing it for a much longer time and has a much bigger equation to figure in 68 teams. But I just think that did play a bigger role than Duck fans are willing to admit. That Chris Boucher, he was a starter on this team last year. He's the sixth man this year. He shoots, he blocks, and he's hurt. He's not there. So I think you have to take that into consideration.
Well, I think they took, you know, they lose him, then they lose to Arizona in the Pac-12 championship. And yeah, while they were the regular season Pac-12 champion, you know, seeing how they performed into that game, and, you know, while they probably just were adjusting to not having him on the floor, they still lost without him. So I think that definitely had to skew a little bit of the view of their team. If you're looking at it from the selection committee's point of view, they don't look at that and go, oh, cool, same team, they're just down a player. They look at that and go, this team could be pretty different. We might want to knock them down a peg or two.
Yeah. And I think that seeding in the tournament is overrated one way or the other. I mean, if they were the number 2 in this bracket, in the same bracket they're in the Midwest, they would have played Jacksonville, which they would have beat them, just like Louisville will.
Right.
And then they would have played Michigan. And I could argue that Michigan's a better basketball team than Creighton. And so by being the number 2 seed in the Midwest, they'd have a tougher round of 32 matchup this weekend. So I think that seeding is a little bit blown out of proportion. I think Oregon's in a good place. I think they've got a pretty good road to the Sweet 16, and then a tough game against Louisville and a tough game against Kansas. And we'll see what happens.
All right. Well, is there an underdog that you're calling an upset? You're going to guarantee this team gets to the Sweet 16?
I looked at my bracket. I don't necessarily have an upset. I think that I like the way that Xavier played today. I know that hurts your heart to hear.
It's all right.
Beat Maryland, but I like the way Xavier played today, and I'm not 100% bought into Florida State I mean, it's before halftime right now. They're down 3 to 14th seed Florida Gulf Coast. And so I'm not 100% bought into Florida State. They've got some star power. They've got some athletes, but so does Xavier. And Xavier just played with a lot of grit today. And so I think Xavier could be that 11th seed that makes it to the Sweet 16.
I like that. So who's your favorite to win it all this year? Who do you have winning the tournament?
I have Gonzaga. That's another reason why this morning or afternoon when they were playing and they were struggling, I was a little nervous. But I just think that I think this group of guys that they've put on the court through the transfers and through the way that they've developed their players, I think that it's just it's a solid, well-rounded group of guys. I mean, today, Nigel Williams-Goss, he scored 9 points, and they won by 20. Like, right. These guys are going to play better as the tournament goes on. They thrive under pressure. That's just the kind of team that they've built up there. They lost one game this year to BYU, who is an inferior team that's not even in the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
But these are 18 to 22-year-old guys, and that's why this bracket is so unpredictable. Who knows how they're going to play? It's a one and done. This isn't a 7-game series. So I think that Gonzaga's got the leadership, the experience, and I think that they could do it this year.
All right, well, let's move on to our next segment, which is Blazers basketball. They came off a really lousy loss to the Pelicans on Tuesday night. Then Wednesday night.
That's an understatement.
Yeah.
That was dreadful.
So then they turn it around the following night and beat the Spurs in San Antonio. After they get LaMarcus Aldridge back, they've got a full complement of players and they still beat them. What do you make of this team? Are they a playoff team? I mean, they're sitting a couple games behind Denver in the 9 seed right now. Just on the cusp. If they somehow make it in, do you see them doing anything with that? And on the other hand, do you even want them to make the playoffs, or would you rather see them go for a lottery pick?
I mean, that's the question of the century right now in Portland, because I do think that this is a playoff team. I thought coming into the season that it was a playoff team. They've dealt with injuries and adversity more than they have the last couple years. I mean, Damian sprained his ankle. Aminu was out for a chunk at the beginning of the season. Turner's been out. They brought in Festus Ezeli. He's been a non-factor and will never wear a Blazer jersey during a game. So they've dealt with a lot more of that kind of stuff this year than they have. And so I think that that's impacted them. I think that they're a better team than Denver. I think that they're as good or a better team than Oklahoma City. I just think the Blazers have lost a lot of really close games through the stretch. I think that they've had those injuries that have impacted them. But I do think when it comes down to it, I think that this team will probably be that 8th seed in the Western Conference.
So if they do get that 8th seed, and you know, whether they get San Antonio or Golden State, do you see them winning a series against one of those teams, or at least making it competitive?
I mean, I think that they'd win a game or two, but I don't think that they can compete with those teams. I mean, San Antonio, what they've built is so incredible. They're so polished. They're so good. And last night, yeah, the Blazers beat them in San Antonio. That was great. But Popovich gets these guys ready for the postseason. He's been there before. He's going to rest guys down the stretch. They're going to be ready. They're going to be rested. Whereas the Blazers, they're going to be full throttle between now and whenever they know they're in the playoffs or out of the playoffs. And so I think that there's more chance for injury on the Blazers side of things. I think that there's more chance of wearing guys out on the Blazers side of things. Plus, San Antonio is just a better team.
Well, and even if they get that far and they win a couple of games, I guess the big question is, where do they go from here? You know, if they do make the playoffs and they lose out on that lottery pick, you know, I don't know if that would have really helped this team in the long term or not, because they've got a pretty good starting five. But the trade for Yusuf Nurkic, how did that help the team? I mean, it seems like him coming to town really turned him around, and they went from a kind of a cellar dweller. All of a sudden, they're a potential playoff team, and they're kind of up in the air right now. And I think that's really something that he's done on his own. he really provides that presence in the center position that they've been missing for a long time, maybe since Arvydas Sabonis left in 2003 or whenever it was. But he plays defense, he plays offense, he's got a really good all-around game, and he's only 22 and he's raw. I mean, that's the funny thing, is that this guy could be even better in the next couple of years when, you know, Dame and CJ are still in their primes.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing, that this is the youngest team in the NBA. The youngest team in the NBA. They're battling for a playoff spot. I fully believe that they're a playoff caliber team. But yeah, if they make the playoffs and miss out on the lottery pick, that I think that that's too bad. I mean, their last three lottery picks have been Damian, CJ, and Myers Leonard. Myers Leonard didn't necessarily pan out. We've all seen that. But I'm the first to admit that I'm like the champion of the Myers Leonard fan club. I think that he needs more minutes. I think that he can do a lot of things that a lot of seven-footers can't do in the NBA. But I also think that this team has set themselves up in a good position, whether they have a lottery pick or not. They have three first-round draft picks this year.
Right.
So if the season were to end today, obviously they wouldn't be in the playoffs and their draft pick would be a lottery pick. But their three draft picks as of today would be number 12, number 20, and number 27. And so I don't think the Blazers are going to bring in three first-round draft picks to compete in camp. I think that those are going to be assets that Neil Olshey is going to move around, whether it be for veterans or to move up into the draft. I think that some of these big contracts, Myers Leonard, Mo Harkless, Ed Davis, some of these guys that are making $7 to $10 million a year, I think that some of those guys are going to get shipped out this summer in trades to move up in the draft, to bring in some veterans, to fill some holes. And I think that you're going to see a different team on the floor next year, regardless of whether the Blazers make the playoffs or not.
I agree with that, and I think it'd be smart of Olshey to package at least one or two, maybe all three of those picks for a really high pick, or to bring in a veteran, or to do some combination of that. You know, this team definitely has some promise, but they're missing a piece or two. You know, is Mo Harkless really a starting small forward in this league? Probably not. And, you know, he's really good on defense. His offensive game needs some work. You've got Jake Layman that, you know, a lot of people want to see get more minutes, and they think that he could be a really good player for Portland. But, you know, there's definitely some missing pieces. I don't think this team, you know, even if they're a playoff caliber team, are they a championship caliber team? And I think the answer is no. So then you definitely need to go out and put some more pieces together to make them a championship caliber team.
Well, and I totally agree. And when you look at the strengths of Neil Olshey and Paul Allen as a general manager and owner, what number one on the line has to be the draft. They've drafted really well throughout the years. They brought in guys that are difference makers. Look at what CJ and Damian have done for this organization. They're arguably the best 1-2 punch guard combination in the league. I mean, you put them right next to John Wall and Bradley Beal, right next to Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. And what they need is they need some size. They need another wing. They need a shooter. Allen Crabbe hasn't turned into that just deadly sharpshooter off the bench. He's been passive. They need someone that's going to come and be a killer on the wing. They need someone that can score in the post. Is that Yusuf Nurkic or is that going to be somebody else? So I think that they're going to find a way to move up in the draft. I think that there's some talent in the top of the draft. The top 8 or 10 picks are pretty impressive, and so we'll see what they can do. In the NFL, a lot of teams trade around their picks, and there's Jimmy Johnson back in the day put together a chart of how much a certain pick is worth. There's not really anything like that in the NBA, but I think that if they were to look at these three picks, there's going to be a ton of value for these three first-round picks around the league. So if you can package all three picks and move into the top 5, top 8, I think that you can bring a difference maker into Portland next year.
Yeah, and then, you know, then, I mean, next year you're talking, you know, a 3 seed or a 4 seed like they were last year when they were a 5 seed and really, really blew people away with how well they did in the second half of the season, which I think is what's got some Blazer fans down on their luck this year. You know, obviously Nurkic fever is helping them cure them of that, but at the same time, you know, last year was supposed to be year one of the rebuild, this being year two, and I think their unexpected success last year definitely propelled some unsavory comments their way that they maybe didn't deserve. You know, this team wasn't supposed to be championship caliber yet. They were not even supposed to be playoff caliber yet. And so last year's success definitely put some people in the wrong state of mind, thinking, okay, they're just going to be even better next year. And I think this year they got exposed as a team that's lacking presence at center, that's lacking defense on the perimeter, and that's lacking an overall leader. And I think Damian Lillard definitely is that leader. It's just, it seems like it takes him till the second half of the season and an all-star snub to wake up and really take this team under his wing. And this year it was actually Shabazz Napier kind of talking to them during halftime of a game they were struggling in. And, you know, leadership comes from all different corners and all different people and all different shapes and sizes. But until you can see a full season of Damian Lillard leading this team on and off the court with aggression, I'm not really sure what they're going to do.
Yeah, and like, all the people that I talk to that are in the Blazers organization say that all the leadership talk is completely overblown, that everybody in the locker room buys into Damian, that he's their guy, that he's who they follow into battle. And I believe that, but I also agree with you that it seems like there's an extra gear that Damian kicks it into in the second half of the season, which is a great thing if you have talent around him in the first half of the season to carry them to the All-Star break.
Right.
But that team just isn't at that point yet. When you're coming into a game and you're really confident in your starting lineup, but you don't know who on the bench is going to produce every night, it's tough to have that confidence in ever putting your bench in the game.
Right.
Damian can't play 40 minutes a night. So I agree with you. I think that there's some things that Damian can show us moving forward. It's going to be a sixth season in the NBA next year. I think that the expectations are going to be super high again, whether this team makes the playoffs or not. But I do think that they're in a very good position, much better than a lot of people give them credit for. They have Damian, CJ, and it looks like they've got Yusuf Nurkic as a building block. I think that this front office is going to be aggressive this offseason in the draft and through trade, that they're going to put some pieces around them, and we'll have a better team here in Portland next year for sure.
I agree. So as far as the whole NBA goes, I assume you've been watching this season. So who are you thinking is the best player in the league as far as MVP goes?
I have a very unpopular opinion on this, and I wrote about it in my NBA roundtable last week with some national writers, and I think that it's LeBron James, and I don't think it's close. I think that LeBron James is the best player in the NBA, hands down. And I also think that LeBron James changes whichever franchise he's in. Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh would never have gotten together in Miami if it weren't for LeBron James. LeBron James is in Cleveland, and he's not only the star of the team, the leader of the team, he's the general manager. LeBron James says, "I want a playmaker." They go out and they find him somebody. LeBron James is there, and he's the leader. And so when it comes to these vets being bought out after the trade deadline, all of a sudden, Deron Williams and Andrew Bogut are signing minimum contracts to go play with the Cavs. LeBron James has so much pull in the NBA that it's unbelievable. And I think that that's why they're the favorite to win the championship again, because LeBron James is the MVP of the league.
Well, and you look at, you know, before he left Cleveland, they were a championship caliber team. And then he went to Miami, and overnight they're a championship caliber team. He leaves Miami, and, you know, they still have Bosch and Wade, but they're not a championship caliber team. It's just those two. And then he goes to Cleveland, and overnight they're a championship caliber team, and they've actually been to a finals and loss, and then a finals and won. And so he brought Cleveland their first sports championship, I think, since like 64. I mean, it's been forever. And, you know, I agree with you. He's a GM. He's a coach. I mean, he's the closest thing the NBA has to a Peyton Manning, who just has all of this talent, all of this savvy, all of this business sense, and he has everything that you really want from a player. And yeah, he can be a little overbearing at times, maybe calling out people, but he's just asking for them to be as good as they can possibly be, because he has this other gear that nobody else seems to have. You know, we talked about Damian having an extra gear. It's like LeBron has an extra gear on top of that, where he's a superstar when he's just having fun. And then when he really gets angry and kicks it up a notch, he's just unbeatable. There's no one that can stand with him. And we saw that last year in the finals.
Last year,
yeah,
right? He's unbelievable. He's the best player in the league. And he's been to six finals in a row. four of those in Miami and then two in Cleveland. And
right.
That doesn't happen. Like, he's been to six NBA finals in a row. And so he's just a transformative player for whatever franchise he's on. And I think that he gets the Michael Jordan treatment in that he's so much better than everybody else that we have to look for other MVPs to give him the award.
Right.
And so we have to find, James Harden has been unbelievable. And not to take anything away from James Harden or Russell Westbrook or any of those guys, LeBron's still the best player. LeBron's still the most valuable player of this league.
Mm-hmm.
I think that one of those other guys is going to win it, but I think that that trophy should go to LeBron's trophy case every year that he's doing what he's doing.
I agree. And, even this year with Golden State struggling without Kevin Durant, I don't think you then hand the MVP to Durant and go, well, clearly he's the reason they were that good in the first place, because he was part of a team and that team was really good even before he got there. Cleveland couldn't even make the playoffs before LeBron got there. Now they're an NBA champion. Same with Miami. They're having trouble even getting out of the first round. And then he goes in there and they're a finals team every year. And, it's crazy how transcendent he is, where, he takes a franchise, like you said, and he overnight turns them into a sensation. And it's crazy. If he was able to play the way he did in Game 7 last year in the finals, imagine how unstoppable he would be. I mean, he doesn't have to play that way most of the time because he's so gifted at what he does. But if he did, he would probably be one of the few players I would say are capable of topping Michael Jordan as the best of all time.
I totally agree. And what he's doing this year is unbelievable. He's 32 years old, plays 38 minutes a night, and we talk about Russell Westbrook averaging a triple-double, which is incredible, but LeBron's at 26, 9, and 8. Like, he's right there at a triple-double, and he plays with Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, and a better supporting cast than Russell Westbrook does. So
right.
What LeBron James is doing is incredible, and I think he should be the MVP. I think that there's about a 1.5% chance that he wins it, but I think he should be the MVP.
I agree. And I think they're going to be the favorite to repeat this year. I mean, they've got such a talented roster, and they just got Love back, and they've already got Kyrie, who's got a little bit of soreness in his knee or something going on, but he's going to be fine for the finals. And there's not really anybody in the Eastern Conference other than maybe Boston that can really handle them. But over a 7-game series, I don't think so. I don't know if there's anybody in the NBA that can handle Cleveland right now.
Yeah, I agree. I really don't think so at all.
So flipping back to the Western Conference, we've seen Golden State struggle. We've seen Steph Curry struggle in the last few weeks without Durant. Even when Durant comes back and, gets back into game shape, do you think that they can advance to the finals with that kind of a problem, or is this going to be kind of it for them?
Well, I think that this is an incredible basketball team. They've showed that the last couple of years. I am curious to see how this injury will impact Kevin Durant and if and when he gets back on the basketball court. Because a couple years back when he had his foot injury in Oklahoma City, I don't know if you remember, but at first it was a 4 to 6 week injury.
Yep.
And then it was a 6 to 8 week injury. And then it was a, we're reevaluating, he needs surgery. And it...
When he came back for a little bit, and then he was gone again.
Yeah, he came back, and then we need to take more MRIs. And so I'm a little leery to give Golden State the Western Conference crown before I ever know if he's coming back on the court. With all that said, I think that the team that they have other than Kevin Durant can make it to the Western Conference Finals, maybe even the NBA Finals, if they're playing well.
And right.
They obviously haven't been lately, but I still think that this is an insanely talented group, and I think that they can make it as far in the playoffs as Steph's shooting takes them, basically. But they have lost 3 out of the last 4 games, and they barely beat the 76ers on Tuesday.
Right.
And so there's definitely question marks surrounding them. I don't know that it's as large of a question mark as some people are making it, but the Western Conference is ridiculously talented. Houston is an insanely talented offensive team. And so if Houston matches up with Golden State in any part of the finals, those games are going to be 130 to 128.
Yep.
And whoever's shooting the 3 better that game is going to win. And so I don't think that Golden State is as untouchable as people thought that they were going to be coming into the season. But I really think that a lot of it hinges on Kevin Durant, and I think it also might hinge on who gets that number one seed heading into the playoffs, them or San Antonio.
Yeah, and I think that's the series that everyone wants to see is Kawhi Leonard versus Durant and, you know, Curry versus Mills or Parker, whoever's at the point at that time, and then, you know, Aldridge against Draymond Green. And, you know, then you've got Gasol against Pachulia. I mean, it would be a really good matchup, and I think everybody's excited for that, but they've got to get that far first. I think a lot of people handed Golden State the Western Conference bid before the season even started, and I think you're right on saying, you know, I don't know that they've earned that. We need to see if they can even get that far before we worry about that.
Exactly, and let's see how they do the next couple nights. Their stretch isn't very easy right now. They're at home against the Magic, which should be a win, but then they play Milwaukee at home, Oklahoma City on the road, and then they've got Dallas and Sacramento, but then they play Memphis, Houston, San Antonio, Houston, Washington.
That's a tough draw.
That's a brutal five-game draw. Two of those are on the road, but that's a Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday. So they play those five games in 8 days against five top-tier playoff teams. So we're going to really see what Golden State's made of that last week of March, first part of April.
Which is really interesting to think about, especially since last year we were trying to figure out who was going to beat them and win, and now we're trying to wonder how many games they can actually win down the stretch.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that obviously has to do with if Steph and Klay can get it going and shoot the ball better. But I think a lot of it has to do with just the mentality of this team. I think they're kind of kicked. They're kind of knocked down. They got to pull themselves back up, and it'll be interesting to see who the leader is. I mean, is the leader Steph? Is the leader Draymond? I've said for the last few years, I think the leader on that team is Steve Kerr.
Yeah.
And when the leader on the team is on the bench for 48 minutes a night, it's really tough to win tight games. And those five games in 8 days, there's going to be some tight games, and that's going to really show us who these Warriors are.
When you watch Steph Curry when he's playing, and his body language is kind of frightening sometimes at how quickly he kind of deflates from being this unbeatable superstar into just a normal guy. And Klay Thompson will get the rah-rah thing going, but I'm not sure how much of a leader he is on that team. And then Draymond Green is kind of the wild card, the X factor. You don't know what you're getting every night. You don't know what attitude he's going to have. You don't know if he's going to be he's kind of like the Richard Sherman of the NBA. You know, you might get the most amazing game out of him you've ever seen, or he might be spending so much time trash talking he's forgetting to even play basketball.
Yeah, and I agree. And I think that one of the other pieces, too, is Andre Iguodala hasn't been good this year.
No. No,
and
he hasn't.
So I think Father Time, who's undefeated, is catching up with Andre Iguodala, and he's been one of those leaders on the court. He's been one of those vocal leaders that can bring the guys together. He's usually the guy talking in the huddle. But does he have that same pull this year when he's not what he has been?
Right. And can he play that defense against LeBron in the finals if they get that far?
Yeah, I mean, that's a legitimate question. He's only 33. He's only a year older than LeBron, but he hasn't been himself this year. He's averaging 6 points a game and four rebounds, three assists. Like, he's not the Andre Iguodala of old. And so does he have the legs to go into a long playoff run and defend Kawhi Leonard or LeBron James or whoever's across from him? That's going to be a tough matchup for him.
Well, I guess we'll see what happens with that when we get there. But let's move on to NFL and free agency. Let's start with Seattle Seahawks. They made a bit of a splash yesterday signing Eddie Lacy, and he's going to be brought in to compete with Thomas Rawls for the starting gig in Seattle's backfield, probably in a timeshare no matter how you slice it, because we know Pete Carroll prefers a timeshare at running back. He has since he was at USC and had Lendale White and Reggie Bush. He commented on wanting that last year with Christian Michael and Thomas Rawls and then C.J. Procise. Now he has Eddie Lacy, Thomas Rawls, and C.J. Procise. He's got a really good 1-2-3 punch. But is that, I mean, Eddie Lacy's injury prone, Thomas Rawls injury prone, we now think Procise might be injury prone. Is this a really good fit for Lacy or Seattle, or is this kind of destined to burn up pretty quick?
I am a huge fan of the signing for both sides. I think that Eddie Lacy is underrated, and I think he's kind of a punching bag. Yes, he's had weight issues, and it came out today that he's got incentives in his contract to maintain a certain weight. I think that he has been kind of a punching bag for the fans as, oh, look at that fat running back, whatever. But in his first three seasons in the league, he had over 180 carries each year.
Right.
Thomas Rawls in his two seasons hasn't had more than 160. And so I think that, yes, Eddie Lacy was injured this last season and had issues. But I think that Eddie Lacy can be relied on more going into the season than Thomas Rawls. And I would say, as of today, I would look at this backfield as an Eddie Lacy, CJ Procise backfield with Thomas Rawls getting the leftover carries. I'm a huge fan of Eddie Lacy for his career. He's averaging 4.5 yards a carry. I think that he can add a lot to this team, and he's back in the mold of a big bruising running back that they want in this offense.
Well, they've been looking for a replacement for Marshawn Lynch, and I think he definitely fits that mold. And Pete Carroll even came out and said that he wants Lacy to be a heavier back. He wants him to be in the mid-240s in his weight, whereas Green Bay was trying to keep him down in the low 230s, which maybe that's just not his natural weight. Maybe he's supposed to be a bigger back. And, you know, his first 2 years in Green Bay, he averaged over 1,100 yards and 9 touchdowns per season, which is incredible. But then in the last 2 years, he hasn't even broke either of those numbers. So I think that's why they might have had issues with how lean or not lean he was. But it's like you said, it's easy to call that out when things aren't working. When they were working, I didn't hear anything about his weight being an issue.
But it's also a completely different system in Green Bay. When they went away from Eddie Lacy, when he got injured, they put it running back, a wide receiver.
Right.
And it looks like Ty Montgomery is going to go into this season as a running back for Green Bay. And so it's a whole different body type. It's a whole different system that they're running. Where in Seattle, they put Russell Wilson under center, and they want their running back to run downhill.
Right.
In Green Bay, they wanted Eddie Lacy to get the corner, and he couldn't. He just isn't that bad. But I do think that the weight is something that Seahawks fans should keep an eye on. It's nothing to worry about. The report was that when he signed with the team, he weighed 267 pounds,
mm-hmm.
which is heavy. They said he was listed last year at 234, but that he never weighed that much. That was just on the roster as this is what he weighs.
Right.
But then his contract incentives came out today, and it looks like the Seahawks want him to play around 245 pounds. And so that's 20 pounds. He's got a full offseason. A lot of players gain and lose 20 pounds when the offseason is happening.
Yep.
It maybe not a running back, but I can tell you that a lot of offensive and defensive linemen fluctuate 20 to 25 pounds every single offseason. And so it's not a huge concern for Seahawks fans. I think Eddie Lacy is an improvement from Thomas Rawls, and I think that a 1-2 punch of Eddie Lacy and CJ Procise in the backfield with Russell Wilson could be really scary.
I agree, and we'll have to speed this up because we're running low on time, but I do want to talk about the rest of the NFL. So Seattle brings in Lacy. They've still got Rawls, still got Procise. They brought in Luke Jokel, who was formerly with Jacksonville, the number 2 overall pick. Hopefully that will improve their offensive line. They still have some holes on offensive line. I mean, their line last year was, I think, the cheapest and the most ineffective offensive line in all of football. Hopefully a year under their belts helped them out. And now they'll have a big bruising back. You know, Marshawn Lynch made that line look good for a couple of years when maybe they weren't as good as we thought they were. And maybe Lacy can do the same thing. You know, balance can do a lot of things for a lot of teams. And speaking of balance, New England is probably the team to beat this year. You know, they go out and they're already the defending Super Bowl champions, but now they've also added Brandon Cooks. They've added, they've brought back a Yeah, they brought back Dante Stallworth, Dante
Hightower.
Dante Hightower. And yeah, they brought Stephen Gilmore, and they just, you know, they're getting Gronkowski back. They traded for Dwayne Allen after they lost Martellus Bennett. And it just looks like they're completely reloaded, and they didn't even need to. And they're talking about bringing in LeGarrette Blount. You know, I think it'd be really scary if they brought in Adrian Peterson, and there's still some whispers that could happen. You know, is there anybody that really stands up to them at this point?
I mean, that's the great thing about the NFL is that there's so much parity in the league. In the NBA, we come into the season and we say, oh, San Antonio, Golden State, Cleveland, they're on another level. And then they play 82 games, and it shows that those teams are on another level. The Patriots are the only thing in the NFL that we can say they're on another level.
Right. They,
Tom Brady and Bill Belichick are operating at a completely different gear than the rest of the league. And so if this team is as scary on the field as they are on paper, the league's in for a long season. And not only that, a lot of people forget that Tom Brady played 12 regular season games this last year.
Right.
Tom Brady's going to be out there for 16 games. The offense is going to start clicking and gelling earlier. This is going to be scary. And I think this Stephon Gilmore is, he's going to be, I think he's a better corner than Malcolm Butler. He's a year younger. I just think that this team is going to be very good. And they're the odds on favorite to win the Super Bowl next year in my mind.
So they're definitely the team to beat in the AFC. And the NFC, does Seattle have enough firepower to compete with the NFC superpowers? I mean, you've got Atlanta, who's the reigning NFC champion. You have Dallas, who was a real surprise last year, but will have their work cut out for them this year to prove to people if they can really do that again. Then you have the Giants, who were the dark horse in the playoffs until Green Bay knocked them out. And now they've added Brandon Marshall to an already really good receiving core. And there's rumors that Adrian Peterson is interested in going there as well. Does Seattle have enough on offense and defense to compete with those teams? Or do they still have some work to do?
Well, when I look at that list of teams you just listed, I don't know that Seattle has the offensive firepower to keep up with those teams. Because when you look at Atlanta and the scoring that they did last season, when you look at Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers and how much they can put on the board, I unless Seattle really addresses that offensive line through the draft or through the free agency period, I still have major concerns about Seattle's offensive line. Now, Russell Wilson is great, and he can make plays with his feet, get out of the pocket, and make that offensive line look a little better. But as great as Russell Wilson is, that offensive line was still terrible this last year. And so I think that there's still some work for them to do. The thing for Seattle, they have very, very little competition in the NFC West.
Right.
The San Francisco is going to be terrible. The Rams are likely to be terrible. Arizona has an aging Carson Palmer, an aging Larry Fitzgerald, and they lost some key defensive pieces. So what is that division going to do to compete with Seattle this year? I would say that Seattle's got one of the easiest walks to the playoffs than anyone in the league. And so does that help this team come together? Does that help this team get some rest throughout the season and be ready for December and January football? I think that it could. And so I fully expect Seattle to win the division. And then once you get to the playoffs, you never know what happens. But I still have major questions about that offensive line.
Yeah, and it's not a very deep draft for offensive linemen either, so they might have to figure out a trade or something. You know, I've talked about them maybe wanting to shop Jimmy Graham and maybe get an offensive lineman back for him. I mean, as good as Graham is, he doesn't really fit with the Seattle offense and what they try to do. He's an amazing player, and it just feels so forced sometimes. The weeks that it works, it looks amazing and seamless, and there's other weeks where he has almost no involvement in the offense, and I think if they could get... You know, they've got Luke Wilson, who they really like, and they've got Cole Helfrich, who they really like as well. And I think that if they could move him and bring in, you know, a tackle or a guard or a center that's proven in the NFL, I think that would really help with this offensive line gelling and being a really good unit, pass blocking and run blocking. And having Lacy and Wilson back there would definitely help. But, you know, unless they make a big move with that, unless we're surprised by Luke Jokel being great in that offense versus being really inconsistent in Jacksonville, I don't know if this is going to work.
Well, the thing that people aren't talking about with Luke Jokel is, yeah, he was the number two player of the draft. But this last year in Jacksonville, year in Jacksonville, he played 220 snaps. So he wasn't he was injured some, but he wasn't a full-time player on the field. And so I do think that there's talent there. He's only 25 years old. But unless he comes in and shows something really impressive that he hasn't the rest of his career, I just think that he's another guy added to that offensive line that you never know what you're going to get week in and week out.
Right. Well, we'll have to wrap up that we're running out of time for this week. But, Garrett, I really want to thank you for joining us. This has been awesome and hope to have you back on again soon. Definitely while March Madness is still going, I'd love to hear your thoughts while that's going on and definitely see how your bracket's doing. I won't necessarily root for you to lose a Final Four team, but I will also won't root against it either. So,
hey, the problem is I'm going to be rooting against my Final Four teams because I want some upsets. I want some buzzer beaters. I want some excitement. So that's the good thing about this is it happens every year. So if my bracket sucks this year, well, there's always next year.
That's
so
true. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, and we'll sign off. This is Casey Mabbitt saying thank you to Garrett Thornton, and we appreciate listening. This has been Armchair Sports presented by Oregon Sports News.